Hello out there. It is the Friday before Halloween.
Yeah.
And as such, for our movie review, I'm finally getting around to one that I've been dying to do for a really, really, really long time.
It's just a weird movie, man.
Because I'm so into Italian horror, and I really haven't done a lot of them on the show. Like, I did one about Suspiria when Tom was away, so I did that one kind of on my own. I think that's the only Italian movie I've done so far, even though I'm, like, a really big, huge fan of them. So I've been waiting forever to do some Lucio Fulci, and today we are gonna do that shit.
Yeah.
We are doing The Beyond.
Yeah.
One of his best movies. Actually, I think it's his best movie. Probably Zombie is his best known, at least in the United States and the UK. But I actually think The Beyond is his most accomplished film. It came out in 1981. The thing about Fulci is that in the US and the UK to the same extent, he's kind of known as, you know, the godfather of gore, you know, the horror guy and
he's
stuff like that.
He's the eyeball guy.
Even though, yeah, and the eyeball guy.
The eyeball guy, yeah. If there's eyeballs, he's going to poke them out.
It, pretty much, yes. And
poke something into them or poke the eye out or pull the eye out or mash the eye out or step on the eye. It's just,
yeah,
he's going to mess with the eye.
And there are many, many examples in The Beyond, you know. So yeah. I think that this has most examples of ocular mayhem, I think, are in The Beyond.
It's got an eye issue.
But the interesting thing about him is that he actually directed movies... I think about 50 movies, and only a kind of a small percentage of them were horror movies. He also did westerns, he did musicals, he did comedies, he did some giallo movies. Actually, he did a really good one, which I think is sort of underrated, which is called The Psychic, or Murder to the Tune of Seven Black Notes, which I might actually do at some point, because I think that it's one that doesn't get a lot of attention, and I really like it. Like, I really like the script, and the way it's shot is really cool. But we are talking today about, as I said, The Beyond. Now, The Beyond is actually the second film in his loose conglomeration known as the Hell Trilogy or the Gates of Hell Trilogy. The first movie was from 1980, and it was called City of the Living Dead or The Gates of Hell. It goes under both of those titles. The third one came out in 1983 and was called The House by the Cemetery. Now, these are all standalone movies, but they have the same theme of like a hell portal or a place, like a cursed place that has like a doorway to hell underneath it.
Yeah.
Another similar thing is that Catriona McCall, the British actress who stars in The Beyond, is actually in all three of them, although she's playing three different characters.
Yeah,
so there's kind of that thematic element also.
When you watch these movies, you can kind of see where John Carpenter got a lot of his inspirations for some of his crazier movies too, because he was taking movies and putting them together in trilogies, even though they were standalones.
Yeah.
Like he's got what? The Thing. He had like an apocalypse trilogy,
yeah, yeah.
Which was The Thing.
Escape from New York.
Escape from New York. And what was that other one? The
Prince of Darkness.
Prince of Darkness.
Yeah.
Yeah, which he said those were all kind of
interrelated.
Same.
Interrelated. Like it's like a thematic
right.
Series, not really like a, you know, numerical sequence or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, and they do kind of feel like Italian flicks.
Yeah.
You could see where he was getting
hugely influenced by particularly Dario Argento. And Dario Argento did the same thing with his quote-unquote Three Mothers trilogy, which, you know, they're three movies that stand alone. You know, it's Suspiria, Inferno, Mother of Tears. But they have, like, the same theme of, like, a witch in a different place.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the Thing didn't have too much of an Italian flair to it, I didn't think. But that Prince of Darkness one did. That was like a nonsensical Italian horror movie,
yeah,
which,
because that's,
if you ask me, these movies are cool to watch. They look good. They don't make a whole lot of sense to me all the time.
Well, they don't make sense to a lot of people, because something you have to think about, Italian horror movies, particularly Lucio Fulci's movies, Dario Argento's movies, Italian horror movies in general, narrative focus, narrative coherence is not their main goal. Particularly in the horror movie genre, what they're trying to do is just, they're trying to establish a mood, or they're trying to establish atmosphere.
Yeah.
They tend to like the set pieces. They like really gruesome, like operatic sort of set pieces.
Yeah.
And they'll just kind of write a sort of coherent story that will, you know, link those scenes together.
Yeah.
Just because they kind of like, they're all about the optics, you know what I mean?
Right.
They just,
I mean,
how it looks.
You could have a character in the story climbing up a ladder, fall down, bust his ass, and for some unexplained reason get eaten up by tarantulas.
Yeah.
You know, and then
which
they're going to show you a prolonged scenes of being eaten by tarantulas, You're not really clear why this has happened.
Well,
but you do go, damn, what the hell? Which I guess is what they,
yes,
what he wanted. He wanted you to not, you know, to just be stupefied, I guess.
Well, and the thing too, particularly about Fulci, you know, about the Beyond and about his Hell trilogy, was that one, they had they started working on the Beyond from essentially a 3-page treatment. They didn't have an entire script. They had an idea of where they were going with it. They had an idea of like some death scenes they wanted to do and kind of a rough idea of the story, but they did a lot of it on the fly.
Right, so they ad-libbed.
So they're actually kind of like, he's almost kind of like, and I don't know if this was, I suspect that it was on purpose because Lucio Fulci started out as an art critic before he was a filmmaker. I suspect that he was a big fan of like surrealism. And so he wasn't too concerned about things making sense. He's just like, I want a dude to fall off a ladder and get eaten by tarantulas and make it work. Like figure out how to put that in the movie. It doesn't make any sense. But the thing about, you know, the Hell trilogy, particularly the Beyond, is that because the whole premise of the movie is that a portal to hell has been opened, or a portal to like some kind of like horrible dimension has been opened, you can get away with a lot of shit in that movie because you can just say, well, you know, demons are coming out, or the dead are rising and stuff, and like, you know, it's just going to make it so that it's bringing your worst fears to life or something like that.
Yeah.
So something that I have to say is people that don't... Italian horror, it's like you either like it and get it or you don't. Because it very much is predicated upon you just being able to roll with it. And just whatever happens, that was cool. Don't try to make sense of it.
I think I'm kind of in the middle. I tolerate it. You know what I'm talking about? I do like it, but it does kind of frustrate me because you're trying to follow a story. And then that story kind of vanishes. And then another story kind of comes in. And then you forget. And there was kind of, at the end, there was kind of an overarching story, but you kind of forgot what that was. But then again, I'm not really known for having like immeasurable patience. You know what I'm talking about? I get kind
of... That's an understatement.
So what I do is you just have a few drinks, you watch the shit, just trip out on it.
Yeah.
That's, you know, and don't try to read too much into it. Just enjoy it. Which, like you said, just roll with it.
Yeah.
But I would actually like to have a more coherent story.
Yeah.
You know, I like character-driven stories. Think our fans know that if it doesn't have any really awesome characters that I like, then I don't care about the movie. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. It's just not for me.
Yeah, you just can't. You can't, like, find a place to get into it.
Yeah, I'm not into it, you know. Yeah.
I'm just kind of like I said, I'm a very laid-back, like, moviegoer. I will probably... I'm very open to a lot of different film styles. So it's like, whatever the person shows, like, you know, show me what you got. I want to see what your vision is. I want to see what you're trying to do. And then I either like it or I don't. But I'm very willing to give people like the benefit of the doubt and just kind of let it roll, whatever it is they're doing. If it's weird or whatever, I don't really care. So I immediately like got into Italian horror and, you know, back in the day, because I was just kind of like, oh, I see what they're doing here. And it's like cool looking and it sort of makes sense enough that you don't really mind. So the thing about The Beyond, there actually is kind of a story behind it. It actually opened in Italy in 1981. Now, it didn't get a theatrical release in the U.S. until 1983. And interestingly about that was that the production company that picked it up actually cut about 8 or 9 minutes out of the movie, mostly the gore, so they could get an R rating, put a totally different score on it, which... I thought that was kind of strange because I kind of like the prog rocky score that it has, even though you'd think it doesn't work. But just like Dario Argento stuff, it actually does kind of work.
When that first started to kick in, I was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Because
it's a little goblin-esque.
It starts off as like an 1800s taking place.
1927 was when the prologue took place.
But it's in New Orleans, which that looks 1800s. Yeah. All right. Just the architecture and everything. And then out of blue, just comes like 60s sounding, 70s sounding like prog rock hippie music. I don't know, what the fuck is this?
A lot of Italian movies did that at the time.
And it had flames and stuff, but I went, okay, I'm just going to go with it. You know what I'm talking about?
That's what I mean. You just got to roll
it. All right. Let's see what they're going to do. Yeah.
So interestingly, like I said, so 7 or 8 minutes or 8 or 9 minutes of the movie was cut out. And then it was released under the title 7 Doors of Death. Now, this kind of made the rounds of the U.S., like in grindhouse theaters and stuff like that. It wasn't super well reviewed because people said, well, it doesn't make any sense. But I'm like, well, obviously, because they took a whole bunch of shit out of it and they took out all the gore, which was like the best part. So actually, people in the United States did not see an uncut version of The Beyond until 1998. And you might find this really interesting, but Quentin Tarantino's Grindhouse releasing and Sage Stallone, of all people, Sylvester Stallone's son, who's actually really into the Italian movies and stuff like that, he actually oversaw the restoration of the original cut of The Beyond. So him and Quentin Tarantino got the movie re-released, a theatrical release in 1998. It kind of made the rounds of the United States. And then it came out later on DVD in its final uncut form, finally, and people could see it. Now, if you had seen, like, the shitty Seven Doors of Death version, which was the version that circulated back in the 80s on VHS, then you would be forgiven for thinking this was a shitty, cheaply, well, it was cheaply made, but, you know, just like a shitty looking movie because it was pan and scan. It's like, you know, it was just grotty looking and it wasn't really well done or anything like that. But if you see it now, because I saw it on Shudder, and I also have the Anchor Bay DVD that came out several years ago.
Yeah, it looks good.
It's actually a beautifully shot movie.
Really good.
And the first prologue of it, which is all like, you know, sepia tone and stuff, set in 1927 Louisiana, is actually kind of showcasing Fulci's and the cinematographer's grasp of like black and white and like light and shadow. And it's like really, really cool looking.
Yeah.
So this is a really, really nice looking movie when you see it in the form that it was supposed to be seen in.
Yeah, it looked high quality to me.
It really did. And like I said, it wasn't made for very much money. You know, like a lot of Italian movies at the time weren't. They were very cheaply made. But obviously, Fulci was not a hack. He did know what he was doing, like, as, you know, concerning shot composition and things of that nature.
The weird thing about it is, as an American, I look at that version of it, you know, because it looked really nice.
Yeah.
You would think, if they went through all that trouble to shoot it that beautifully, they could have had a better script, I think, with a more coherent story, more driving, I would think.
Yeah. But like I said, it's not their main concern.
It's not their thing. They don't
that
care.
That was just, it's a cultural thing.
It's a cultural thing, I
particularly
guess.
Particularly as horror movies
kind of like they have, Italians have an ice cream called Spumoni, where you just take every damn flavor and put it in that ice cream.
Yeah.
You know, that's not for everybody.
It's just, well, yeah, but like I said, it's cultural differences makes the world interesting.
Yeah, and that's the way Fulci was going to do a movie. It's Spumoni.
Yeah.
Basically. Spumoni film.
Well, like
it says spaghetti western. It's called Spumoni horror. Yeah.
I actually have a book about Italian horror that's called Spaghetti Nightmares.
Okay.
But yeah, so there is, like I said, there is kind of a story to this. Catriona McCall, like I said, she's a British actress, and she was in all three of Fulci's Hell Trilogy movies. She plays a woman named Liza from New York City, and she gets called to New Orleans after some uncle that she barely knew dies and leaves her this hotel called the Seven Doors Hotel in Louisiana. This was actually filmed at Otis House, which is a quite famous historic property in Louisiana, which still stands today. If you want to go visit it, you can say, hey, this is where they shot The Beyond.
Wow, that survived the storm?
Yeah, like, as far as I know.
Okay.
And so it, most of the exteriors, most of the interiors were actually shot in New Orleans. Pretty much the only stuff, they had to shoot some of the real special effects, intense stuff. They had to shoot that in a studio in Rome.
It's kind of funny. They were shooting all this stuff and they were going through Decatur Street and everything. And of course, you know, that's where I used to hang out when I was living on the Gulf Coast of Mississippi recently. You know, well, in the 90s is when I was living there. And, it's just funny because they're showing me all these places that I'm associating with the old goth scene.
Yeah.
You know?
That's this does have a very Southern Gothic kind of feel. It's
Doesn't illustrate the heat, though. It's very hot and it's very humid, and moss and mold grows on everything there. And it has a certain smell to it. It has a smell of a drying up lake bed at certain times of the years. It's just weird. I
know that smell. Florida smells like that sometimes, too.
Swamp. It's a smell of swamp.
Well, we're essentially living in the middle of a swamp right now, pretty much. Orlando used to be a swamp. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they shot most, but I think they shot it the fall and winter time, so maybe it wasn't quite as hot as usual. So she gets this hotel, and she's going to fix it up. Because this is kind of her last chance. She's just been sort of like drifting and aimless and stuff. And then all of these like really, really creepy accidents like start to happen. And then she befriends this blind girl named Emily, who she finds out later on is maybe not what she seems. So the thing about this, like I said, I mean, other than that very simple plot synopsis, it's just, you know, she moves into this hotel and weird shit starts to happen. it's kind of just a setup for all of the disgusting shit that happens later on. And like I said, it's just, you know, you get to see a dude eaten by tarantulas. There are three, count them, three eye gougings in this movie, one of them with a nail. You get to see a couple people nailed to the wall, like crucifixion style. You get to see a little girl get her head blown off.
Yeah.
In a very, very famous...
Yeah, a lot of weird ghosts and zombies and pretty ghost women and zombie girls and little zombie girls. You know, it's quite interesting, actually. Visually, it's impressive.
Yeah, like I said, it has like a surrealistic sort of flair. Also, it was very much influenced by H.P. Lovecraft. And actually, there's a little bit of a deep cut. But the book that appears, it's kind of like an ongoing plot point in the movie, which is called The Book of Ibon. It just says Ibon on the front. And it's just this old book that is apparently talking about, you know, gates of hell and the dead will walk the earth and blah, blah, blah. The Book of Ibon is actually a Lovecraftian reference. It turned up in a few, at least three of his stories, one of which was Dreams in the Witch House. So I thought that was kind of cool that he's like, well, I'm not going to use the Necronomicon because everybody does the Necronomicon. Yeah, you know. So I'm going to go a couple deeper and like mention some other shit that he brought up in some of the other stories. So this does have like kind of a Lovecraftian thing. And if you look at it in that context, like you were saying about Prince of Darkness, if you can kind of look at it as a sort of, we're opening up a hell dimension and all this crazy shit is going to happen, then you can just kind of let it ride, like all this crazy shit happens and it's fine.
Kind of like Into the Mouth of Madness.
Remember where it's like, it's not
Lovecraftian
a Lovecraftian
spin-off kind of original.
Yeah, and it's the same kind of thing with like this book, and like, you know, there was this guy named Schweik at the beginning, like in the prologue, where he was suspected to be a warlock and he did this creepy painting, and then he got killed by a mob and all this other stuff, and then he got like walled up in the basement, and somehow like discovering him like led to this thing being opened.
Mentioning Lovecraft, and we were also talking about, you know, like The Thing, Carpenter. The Thing may be a Lovecraft story. In the book, In the Mountains of Madness, some guys go down to Antarctica and they find an alien city, okay? And while they're there, a bunch of stuff happens. They meet this thing called a Shaggoth, which is kind of an amorphous slave creature that the old ones had enslaved. Really, the Shaggoth is the Thing from the movie The Thing.
Yeah.
Okay? So instead of finding a city, they find an alien spaceship. What I'm saying is that The Thing is kind of like a takeoff, or Carpenter's version of The Thing, kind of like a takeoff on In the Mountains of Madness.
Yeah.
Basically that same story. And The Thing is a Shaggoth. The Shaggoth is kind of described as shape-shifting and having eyes when it needed it and teeth when it needed it. And, you know, so that's that same alien.
Yeah. And I kind of feel like I said, Carpenter particularly, you know, he was influenced, like I said, by Italian horror, but he was also very influenced by Lovecraft. And a lot of his movies had Lovecraftian feel to them.
Yeah, so all these guys are kind of using Lovecraft as an inspiration for their source material.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, Fulci did the same thing, because the first movie in the Gates of Hell trilogy, which is City of the Living Dead, it actually had a priest hanging himself, and that opened a portal to hell, and the town was called Dunwich. Yeah. So, you know what I mean? So he's using the same kind of thing. And like I said, it was the same thing with the Book of Ibon, which is kind of like a demonic sort of thing in this. And, you know, it's kind of a thing where initially, in the initial treatment of this, I don't actually think that they were supposed to be zombies or that it was supposed to be a zombie movie. But evidently, some of the producers were like, well, your movie Zombie was so popular that let's put some zombies in there.
And it is New Orleans.
Yeah.
So you have Marie Laveau.
So you have that
you
kind
have
of
zombie
thing
and,
going on.
And voodoo stuff. So,
it does make sense. They don't really feel shoehorned in, like I said, because it does really feel like you would have that. Like if a portal to hell opened, you would have like, because I feel like he was kind of inspired by the whole, you know, when there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth, like George Romero type of thing. So I feel like that was a factor as well. Although I have to say, my favorite character in this is Emily, the blind girl. She's super cool in this and super cool looking, like with those creepy white contact lenses. Now you have to think this was shot in late 1980. And they didn't have all these little nice, soft, squishy contact lenses in the old days.
Yeah, we got a ton of them.
These were made of thick glass, and they were hand-painted.
And you had to order them special.
And when you wore them, you could legitimately not see anything. So she was playing a blind girl. They're like, she wasn't playing a blind girl. She was blind. She couldn't see anything. So it's like, you know, she's just walking around with these fucking things on her eyes. And you had to take them off like every 15 minutes because your eyeballs couldn't breathe. So same kind of thing there. But, you know, like I said, she's kind of the coolest character because she is ostensibly, I mean, you see her normal, like at the beginning in the prologue, and she's, you know, reading from the Book of Ibon or whatever. But then later on, when you see her, at first, the main character, Eliza, played by Catriona McCall, she thinks this is a real person, even though she sees her. The first time she sees her, and I love this shot, Catriona is driving along the causeway in New Orleans, and she sees the blind girl and her dog, like, and there's nobody around. Like, it's just a big empty causeway, and she's driving, and then all of a sudden she sees this girl standing in the middle of the road, and there's just water on either side. Like, where did she come from? And all this other kind of stuff. So I love that shot. It's, like, so creepy. But at first she thinks this is a real person. Now, there's some kind of confusion about why Emily is, I think she kind of escaped from hell, and then she kind of got in trouble with the other, you know, corpses that had escaped from hell because she tried to warn Liza about the hotel and about what had happened there, and she shouldn't reopen it. Don't go in room 36, which was kind of like a homage to The Shining, I think. You know, that whole type of thing there. Another thing that I thought of was that the premise of this movie is actually kind of similar to the premise to The Sentinel from 1977, which actually we have to do a show on because I love that movie. It's super creepy. Yeah, and I haven't seen it for a long time, but it's like, it's really super creepy. But it's a similar, I mean, it's not really the same style or anything, but it's a similar kind of premise with like,
I want to see again. I want to see The Keep. Remember that one?
Yeah, we have to do that one too. Yeah, I put that one on the list. I hope we have such a huge list.
I want to buy that one, I think, on Blu-ray if I can find it.
Yeah. It's like, I know that.
I loved that as a kid. I just hadn't seen it in so long.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that it takes like a long time because I know that a lot of you have requested movies, and I promise that we
got years worth of requests
get around to them. But yeah, we have this humongous list, and I'm like adding new ones all the time.
Yeah,
and then
we have to prioritize them for relevancy to other things that we've talked about. Like, it doesn't really make sense to pull out a movie that isn't related to anything else we haven't talked about yet. When there's stuff that we can say, oh, you know, we talked about this, let's bring this into the mix. So there's got to be kind of an order in the way things kind of unfold.
But yeah, and
we'll eventually get to it.
And we're actually trying to get through ones that we either own or that are available on Shudder or Tubi or something like that. So we're trying to get like through all of those so we don't have to like purchase new ones for a little while. Because
you want to go to a movies that helps you unlock other movies. You know what I'm talking about?
Exactly. Like, exactly.
So we have to have some kind of a sane order to these.
Yeah. And like I said, I have been wanting to do at least one Lucio Fulci movie for a long time. And when I saw that Shudder had The Beyond, and it also has Zombie, and they have House by the Cemetery. I don't think they have City of the Living Dead. But so I said, well, let's do The Beyond because that's actually, even though Zombie is probably a lot better known, The Beyond is actually my favorite. So I think it's his best movie. And like I said, I want to do The Psychic as well, but I don't own that. So we'll have to wait until I get that.
If we do the order right, somebody could go through our playlist and would almost kind of play as almost kind of like a course in film.
Yeah.
It's really probably unfold.
Yeah.
And that's how I just kind of thought of it instinctively, to kind of have a starting point with, The Shining.
Right.
It's basically what we started with.
Yeah, because that was our first episode.
Yeah.
Like, we talked about The Shining.
You know,
yeah.
It's a pretty milestone film.
And one of my favorite, not just my favorite horror movies, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
It's one that I could watch over and over and get sick of. But the thing about, so let's talk a little bit about, now the gore in this is pretty much, 80 to 90%, very, very well done. It's obviously all practical effects because it was made in the late 1970s, early 1980s. There are a couple of, effects in there that didn't really hold up so well, especially the most infamous being the tarantula scene where, you know, obviously some of the tarantulas are real, but obviously some of them are decidedly not real.
Doesn't really matter.
But it doesn't really matter. It's like you have, like I said, it's 1980. And actually the effects in this were actually quite a bit better than some other movies that came out around the same time period.
sometimes when you see those old special effects in the context of the time and the film, kind of that weird, cheesy 80s practical effects actually plays better in them, I think, than reality.
I think so, too, honestly.
It's kind of like part of the character or the flavor of the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sometimes you see an effect and it's not convincing, but you just don't care. It's still cool.
Yeah, because you're watching it. You're watching the movie as like a whole, you know, a whole gestalt, like the whole sum of its parts.
And you're also, it's part of that particular genre.
Yeah.
You know, like the Evil Dead 1 would not be the Evil Dead you remembered if that had awesome special effects.
Yeah, it's just, it would lose like most of its charm.
It would lose
a lot
of it, yeah.
And I feel like that's what happens with a lot of the Italian movies. Because like I said, now some of the effects in this, like when Martha gets her eyeball popped out by the nail, when Jill gets her head blown off with the gun, stuff like that, when the one woman gets her face melted off with acid, those actually still look pretty damn good. Yeah. Also, when Emily gets, you know, her throat ripped out and things like that, it's like most of that looks pretty damn good still.
Well, it's just like, what is it? Star Wars A New Hope. That very first Star Wars.
Yeah.
All pretty practical effects.
Yeah.
Putting modern effects over those would ruin that movie.
It would.
You know, and that's one thing that Lucas did. He added CG to it. Now, some of the scenes actually did kind of enhance it a bit with the TIE fighters.
Yeah.
But there are too many damn creatures in Mos Eisley, and there's too much shit. Mos Eisley looked better when it looked like a little rinky-dink place out in the middle.
It did.
And, you know,
he just doesn't know when to stop.
He doesn't know when to stop.
He's just like, that's why, do you remember when we saw on YouTube, like somebody made like a joke video about Lucas like adding all this, just like every single thing that happened, there had to be a big monster like walking in the front and they're like walking behind and everything. It's like he just couldn't stop himself.
Just add some more and more.
Add some more aliens. Yeah. Add some more of this. Add some more flying shit. Add some more. It's like, Lucas, tone it down, man.
Lucas always kind of needed adult supervision, really.
That's a good way of putting it.
His, you know, the best movie was the first one and the second one, you know, I think, you know, everybody agrees Empire Strikes Back, or excuse me, Empire Strikes Back is a classic. He didn't really have a whole lot to do with that movie. That was directed and edited by other people. And New Hope, actually, the greatness of that movie came from the edit, and he didn't do the edit.
Yeah.
Some stuff has escaped what that movie originally was like before it was all edited, and it was a fucking mess. I mean, it looked cheap.
Editors are the unsung heroes of the movie industry.
Yeah.
We salute you, editors. Because seriously, you know, that you can have the best, you know, vision in the world.
Yeah.
But if you don't have somebody to judiciously edit your shit together in a way that is like, makes it coherent and makes the, you know, plot move along and stuff like that, then your movie's going to suck.
And that was one of the things with Italian horror that kind of annoyed me. The edit isn't real tight, and I think the movies could have been a lot better or at least I would have liked them a lot better had they had really tight edits and they were really, you know, plot driven or character driven, but they don't really seem to be. They seem to be kind of meandering.
Yeah, like I said, they're more interested in like surrealism and like showing particularly weird.
Yeah, and I think it was more like
unsettling imagery.
I think the story was built around certain scenes that they wanted.
Exactly pretty much how they work.
Yeah,
in general,
we have to have some people eaten by tarantulas. We have to have a couple of zombies. We have to have a ghost girl. All right, how do we make this work?
Yeah,
and that's essentially exactly
what they did.
Yeah, kind of backwards engineering, but I think.
But like I said, that's a cultural thing.
I think they were
thing.
Just trying
that's
to. Yeah, it's a cultural thing, and they were trying to knock the movie out. Really,
that too.
They were just trying to do the movie. So let's just film these scenes, and we'll worry about it later.
Yeah, we'll worry about it making sense later.
Yeah, I think that's what they did.
Although, you know what I mean. And another thing too, I think another thing that sort of is off-putting to people that are not used to Italian cinema of this era is that pretty much all of them are dubbed. Because for cheap, I don't know a lot about movie making, but evidently doing sound sync on set is sort of costly and sort of complicated.
Yeah, especially back then, probably.
So, back then. So what the Italians would do is that they would usually, and also they usually had actors from lots of different countries, and some of them could not speak the language.
For export. Italy is not a big enough market, so you have to have it available in every European language.
Right. So what they would do, essentially, is they would shoot the movies silent, And then they would have overdubs. So everything is overdubbed, even if the people are speaking English or if they're speaking Italian.
They dub them too.
They dub everybody, and all the sound effects are dubbed and everything like that. So now some people find that off-putting. Like I said, it doesn't bother me. I think it used to bother me more. But once you get used to it, it doesn't really bother me now. Although House by the Cemetery, which is the third movie in this trilogy, very famously, the poor kid that played Bob in that movie was dubbed so badly that even to this day, like, Fulci fans still make fun of it and are talking about, like, and it's sad because the kid seemed like he was doing a good job, like an acting job and stuff, but the person that dubbed his voice, it was just, was so, so bad. And it's like, so now that's become kind of like a funny, like, thing about the movie, even though I still really like that movie and I think it's really cool. But another thing that I really like about this movie too, before we wrap up. Now, the ending of this is very famously super bleak, which I really, really like about it. Like, pretty much at the end of it, the two protagonists are like, okay, well, we're fucked forever. And then end. Originally, and I just found this out today, the end of this movie, it was supposed to be, they did go into the other dimension and everything like that, but it was supposed to look like an amusement park. For whatever reason, because it was just like some kind of weird dark amusement park or everything. So they were going to do that initially, but then because they didn't have enough money, they were just kind of like, no, let's do this instead. We'll just film it like in this big studio, like a blank studio with sand all over the floor. They got a bunch of people to lay down and be corpses. And they're just like, this is the hell dimension. There's like nobody here. It's like you have to wander this plane with all these corpses like for the rest of your life, and there's no way to get out because you keep circling around and you keep coming back to the same place again, which to me is actually a lot more terrifying, I think. So I'm actually kind of glad that they went that direction instead of the amusement park direction, because I'm not so sure how well that would have worked out. But yeah, so I have to show, if you're watching on the video, I actually have this book here, and it is called Beyond Terror: The Films of Lucio Fulci. And as you can see, it is a very, very large book because he made a really lot of movies, not all of them horror movies, even though those are his most famous. If you don't know a lot about Italian horror and you kind of want to get into it, then you could, there's probably worse places you could start than the Beyond, because I think, like I said, it's Fulci's best movie. As I said, don't expect it to really make a lot of sense, you know, just kind of go with the surrealism, go with the dubbing, just let it wash over you.
It's like watching a painting.
It is kind of, because the imagery is very nice. And like I said, Dario Argento's movies are similar. You know, it's a different style a little bit. His are a little more operatic, but it's kind of the same thing. If you're not expecting narrative coherence, you just want to look at it to see like these amazing, like gruesome kind of tableaus and stuff, then I think you'll really dig them. Tom has actually only seen The Beyond, and we watch Zombie also. Yeah. So he's not real up on Italian horror. This is kind of my thing. So I'm kind of glad we got along.
But I grew up with it. I remember it.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up with it. There was a bunch of them I saw that I didn't even know the names of them. You know,
because
they played them on cable back in those days all the time, you know.
Yeah.
And you'd see them, the dubbing and the way they were shot. They didn't transfer out to television too well. Like, for instance, I may have seen this movie and just don't even remember.
You might have.
But it looked good on Shudder. It looked really good on a modern, you know, HDTV. And yeah.
Because the funny thing was, when they released this as Seven Doors of Death, like I said, on VHS and in the theaters back in the 80s, they really, really were trying hard. And they probably did this with other Italian movies, too. They were really trying hard, like, to not let people know that it was Italian. Like, cause, you know, it's like people don't want to watch them dirty foreigner movies. So they actually, even in this one, in The Beyond, they actually anglicized Lucio Fulci's name, so it said directed by Louis Fuller.
Yeah, well, you know, Italy had a bad reputation.
Yeah, they did a lot of knockoffs.
Yeah, they had a bad reputation for quality at that time. I remember my dad, oh, this is Italian, he'd turn it. Because they just had a bad reputation for just shooting shit, you know what I mean?
And yeah.
It started with Westerns.
Yeah.
They had some good Westerns, but most of them were terrible. You know, and they're forgotten now.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, only the good ones, stood the test of time, right.
You know, a lot of movies that I grew up with, I had no idea how good they actually looked until you see them in a modern format.
Exactly.
Like, you know, I can go back to Escape from New York, my favorite movie. I never got to see it in the theater. I saw it on TV and I liked the idea, but I didn't know that was a beautiful movie until I got that Steelbook edition of it on Blu-ray. You know, that is a pretty movie. And you can see where Carpenter used a lot of Italian lighting techniques to shoot that movie.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guy. Who was the guy who did Suspiria in there?
Dario Argento.
Dario Argento. The you know, like the blue and the green backlighting and red.
Although a lot of that started with Mario Bava.
Mario
actually.
Bava, too. Yeah. Okay. So because I remember you mentioned it, you know, look how Italian this movie looks.
Yeah.
And it doesn't come across too well on an old television
that no.
we were seeing, you know what I mean? Like back in the cable days, you didn't really see it that well. You see it on HDTV, man, it's really good.
That's why I'm really happy that like a lot of these kind of cult classic movies are now getting completely restored and that, you know, being released on Blu-ray or even coming up on Shudder when high definition and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you really get a new appreciation because, like I said, when I rewatched The Beyond, I'm like, wow, I had forgotten. This is a gorgeous looking movie. It's like real, all the shot compositions are really nice. And you just don't get that like from the old, like if you saw it on VHS or if you saw it like just back in the old days, it's like, you know, it looked all shitty and it's like, this is a stupid movie.
VHS and cathode ray tube television, boy, just didn't do these films justice.
Yeah,
and we didn't know at the
like
time.
Crap.
We didn't know any better.
Well, there was
nothing to compare it to, really.
I mean, even when you went and saw stuff in the theater, it didn't look that great.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on, you know, how it was shot or what kind of film stock it was
Dune
shot
Dune looked really good on that new Blu-ray I got for Dune. That looked really good.
Yeah, that looked amazing.
I've never seen Dune look that good.
And we've gotten a whole bunch of movies, like, from that era.
Remember how good Flash Gordon looked?
Yeah,
Flash Gordon is beautiful.
That was mind-blowing.
I had no idea that zany-ass movie looked that good, but on Blu-ray, on a really good television, you can see the threads and the weave inside the materials of the costumes. You can see how expensive those costumes were.
Yeah.
And that just did not come across on television.
Yeah. It's really given me
on old TV.
Yeah. It's really given me like a new appreciation for like a lot of those older movies.
And how good that sound was.
Yeah. Because like look how nice it looked and nobody knew, I guess, until it was restored and like
and
showed
I saw that in the theater and it didn't look that good. But it's because it's just in a regular old crappy ass theater
that we had
back then in the early 80s. You know, in the 80s, you're just like... Even the theaters couldn't do that movie justice.
Exactly. It's like, because nobody had high definition. Nobody knew what that was.
No, it looked candy colored and just psychedelic. It looked like it's straight out of a comic book.
Yeah.
And it was great. They actually made a comic book movie, but it just couldn't come across with the technology of the time.
Yeah.
But now you can see
it.
It was ahead of its time, yeah.
But that's the thing. It's like, in some ways, I miss the 80s and stuff. Like, a lot of good movies were made back then. But in a lot of ways, like, a lot of the technology and shit was just shitty.
It's like, we have
so much better stuff now. And I feel like you can appreciate the movies a lot more because they look so much better. They look the way they're supposed to look, the way the director wanted them to.
I can't wait to see the new Dune. And I would love for them to redo Flash Gordon. Like an old style Flash Gordon.
They'll get around to it, I think.
With, you know, sexy, perverted aliens, fantastic costumes, psychedelic clouds in the background, no gravity, or, you know, those gravity in space. That's a good way to put it. There's an up and down. You know, just like the old Flash Gordons. I think nowadays with CG, you could do a fucking great job with that.
Yeah,
that'd
sure
be fun, probably.
Yeah, it probably would.
It has to be just off the wall, though.
Yeah, I would feel like
close to the source material.
Yeah, I think they should do it kind of like the original,
just like
was
the original,
done,
yeah,
like with those kind of just over the top colors and over the top costumes. And
yeah,
stuff like that.
And things that just don't make sense and retro technology.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, like I said, that's part of the charm
of
the movie.
That's part of it, right.
And, you know, getting back to, like I said, like Italian films, it's like the part of the charm of the movie is that it's like it doesn't really make a lot of sense. And it's like, you know, why is this woman in there putting a suit on her dead husband in the morgue and no one's stopping her? And then all of a sudden she falls and like a quicklime or acid falls on her face and she starts dissolving. I'm just like, just don't question it. Just don't. Shit happens.
Yeah.
It just happens. And just don't worry about it. Just enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So like I said, okay, so I guess we will wrap up this kind
of
meandering look into, like I said, our first Lucio Fulci movie. I'm hoping to do some more in the future. So if you like Italian horror, you know, stay tuned. We'll get to some more later on. And also, this is going to be our last movie our last movie review before Halloween. So everybody have a good Halloween out there.
Yeah, and it's a good Halloween show coming.
Yeah, and we're still working on the Halloween special, so that'll be out soon too. And remember, if you like the show, like, share, subscribe on all your social media. If you'd like to financially support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/13oclockpodcast, or go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com, and there's a link in the sidebar to a PayPal account if you'd like to give a one-time donation. Remember, our regular shows come out every Tuesday, movie reviews come out every Friday, and our show Matinee, which is our three new movies that we see every week, comes out on Sunday. So check them all out, and until next time, bye.